Good morning. My name is Olivia Zink, and I'm pleased to welcome you to the Monadnock Summer Lyceum with today's guest speaker, Jeff Clements. For many years, Monadnock Lyceum has brought outstanding world-class speakers to the Monadnock region as a catalyst to inform, engage, and inspire an active citizenry on local, national, and global issues. The Monadnock Lyceum is sponsored primarily through contributions from the audience. Our speaker today is Jeff Clements. Jeff is an attorney, author, and co-founder and CEO of American Promise. Jeff majored in government at Colby Sawyer. He attended his JD from Cornell Law School. Jeff served as the assistant attorney general, and in your program, there's lots more about Jeff's bio. But in 2009, as a private attorney, Jeff Clements represented several public interest organizations with the U.S. Supreme Court in an amicus brief in the Citizens United case. I serve as the executive director of Open Democracy, a group working on campaign finance reform here in New Hampshire. We were founded by Granny D, a Dublin resident, who 20 years ago walked from California to Washington, D.C. to raise awareness for this cause. Open Democracy has worked closely with American Promise to make New Hampshire the 20th state, calling on Congress to fix our broken campaign system. I work with a lot of national reform groups, and American Promise stands out, and so doesn't Jeff, for his intelligence, his strong leadership, and his compassion. He really is interested in transformational change and building relationships with citizens on the ground to make this change happen. I hope you will enjoy his remarks, and it will inspire you to take action, because we need to shift the power and the political discourse back to the people.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Olivia. The work you do and Open Democracy does here in New Hampshire is inspiring indeed. And I am so grateful to be here in the Monadnock Summer Lyceum, where you've had so many inspiring conversations. As you know, this series has roots in the American Lyceum movement from the earliest days of our republic. From 1826, thousands of local Lyceum lectures quickly spread out from here in New Hampshire and New England to the rest of the country, so Americans could weigh and debate issues in their own communities: the abolition of slavery, equal rights for women, sustainable agriculture, science and faith, and so much more. This Lyceum movement has been called the herald of a new broad-based democracy in 19th century America, or as Dennis Robinson recently put it in the Portsmouth Herald, an early version of the TED Talk. So, our subject today is timely. Just this month, your legislature in Concord enacted a resolution to demand an amendment to the United States Constitution so that citizens may limit the role of money in elections. New Hampshire's action now makes 20 states that have started moving this constitutional amendment forward. Your New Hampshire resolution says as follows: Congress and the states shall regulate the role of money in elections and governance to ensure transparency, prevent corruption, and protect against the buying of access to or influence over representatives. I'll say it again, the New Hampshire resolution: Congress and the states shall regulate the role of money in elections and governance to ensure transparency, prevent corruption, and protect against the buying of access to or influence over representatives. This proposed constitutional amendment, which would be the 28th, would reverse Supreme Court decisions holding that unlimited money from corporations, unions, super wealthy individuals to influence local and state federal elections is simply free speech, protected by the First Amendment, no matter the consequences. At American Promise, we believe the Supreme Court is wrong, and we think New Hampshire is right. New Hampshire's constitutional amendment resolution takes a more traditional view of the First Amendment and free speech and money and the nature of American democracy. In this view of the First Amendment, all Americans have free speech rights, an equal right to speak and be heard, to be represented in our political system, an equal right and responsibility as citizens to learn and understand from many different perspectives and viewpoints, even those you disagree with. This more traditional view of the First Amendment recognizes equal rights and the danger of corruption that comes from concentrated power. In other words, as a conservative Republican on our American Promise Advisory Council puts it, the proposed 28th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution does not amend the First Amendment, it rescues the First Amendment from the oligarchs. How we as a nation resolve this constitutional debate, the unlimited money into our elections from the Supreme Court's current approach, on one hand, or the reasonable limits and balance of the constitutional amendment approach, on the other. This resolution of this debate will shape America and therefore the world for the next century and beyond. And so today I want to share with you why I'm so confident that the constitutional amendment that New Hampshire now stands behind will prevail. Though much has changed, we here today share something basic with Americans of the early Lyceum movement in Abraham Lincoln's days, a stubborn American belief that mutual education, reason, deliberation, engagement, and action with our fellow citizens not only make better, more productive, happier people and communities, but are essential to make democracy and liberty real in this world. So, in the Lyceum spirit, let's begin with some facts. 20 years ago, Doris Haddock, Granny D, from this neighborhood of New Hampshire at the age of 89, inspired the nation with her 3,000-mile walk to Washington, D.C. to demand reform of money in elections. 20 years ago, Granny D said, "We are losing our democracy." She had seen a shift in her long life that while once the voice of her and her fellow citizens was heard, now elite political donors dominated the attention of representatives. At the time, and this was around 2000, Granny D was far from alone. A federal investigation had just reported that even senators were admitting, quote, "elected officials have become so dependent on political contributions from wealthy donors that the democratic principles underlying our government are at risk." President Bill Clinton, who was going to fundraisers 6 days a week, privately lamented, "I can't think, I can't do anything. Every minute of my time is spent at these fundraisers." So 20 years ago, Granny D's long walk tapped a nerve in America, and something remarkable happened. Democrats and Republicans in Congress came together to pass the Bipartisan Campaign Reform Act, known as McCain-Feingold, after its Senate sponsors. Among other things, the Bipartisan Campaign Reform Act closed loopholes on so-called soft money and the loopholes on the prohibition on corporations and unions spending money for or against candidates in the days close to an election. It was a modest reform, but it was a start. Back then, Granny D and so many Americans knew that money was beginning to silence the voices of ordinary citizens and erode our democracy. Yet, as they warned us at the time, it would get much worse if we did not act. Consider, in 2000, John Sununu's campaign had spent $578,000 to win the election in New Hampshire's first congressional district. In 2000, Charlie Bass's campaign spent $812,000 to win in the second district, and over 75% of their donors were from New Hampshire. In 2002, around the same time, the Senate race between John Sununu and Jean Shaheen cost $9 million. A lot of money, but now fast forward to 2016 election for the Senate. Well, the House candidates in that year had spent about $3 million in each race, so that was going up. But in the Senate race between Kelly Ayotte and Maggie Hassan, each candidate spent $18 million. $36 million in total. This not only was a 400% increase compared to 2002, now most of the money came from wealthy donors far removed from New Hampshire. Forcing New Hampshire candidates to chase millions of dollars from wealthy out-of-state donors would be bad enough, but that's not all. That $36 million in the Senate race was not the half of it, not nearly the half of it. Back in 2002, what they called outside money, the PAC money, was around $68,000. In 2016, on top of that $36 million that the campaign spent, the so-called super PACs spent $96 million in that single Senate race. Nearly $100 million, and here's the thing, 90% of that money went to attacks. It wasn't about debate, it attacked the other candidates. By 2016 then, this one New Hampshire Senate race was $132 million. So look behind the numbers now to see why ordinary citizens are not heard or represented, why this is indeed a constitutional crisis. At American Promise, we're vigorously nonpartisan, cross-partisan, so bear with me while I look at just a bit of the facts on each side of the political spectrum. Starting with the biggest spender in the 2016 New Hampshire election, it was something called Granite State Solutions. Granite State Solutions for the Granite State, right? Well, not exactly. As you may have guessed, Granite State Solutions is not from the Granite State, unless Georgia has a new motto. Someone formed the Granite State Solutions Super PAC in Athens, Georgia, just before the 2016 election. Perhaps you here in Peterborough may want to form the Peach State Solutions PAC. So, Granite State Solutions spent $24 million opposing Maggie Hassan, almost all of that $22 million. Well, almost all of the $24 million, $22 million in total, came from a single entity, another entity far removed from New Hampshire, called the Senate Leadership Fund PAC. The Senate Leadership Fund PAC is based in Virginia. Its CEO is the former chief of staff to Kentucky Senator Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader. Beyond the $22 million it spent in the New Hampshire election, the Senate Leadership PAC spent $116 million. In 2016. Now, it's a lot of numbers, but let's just look at where the money comes from again to see how little this has to do with free speech in New Hampshire. One of the largest donations to this PAC was another entity still called One Nation. So One Nation to Senate Leadership Fund to Granite State Solutions. One Nation is at the same address in Virginia as the Senate Leadership PAC and has the same CEO, Senator Mitch McConnell's former chief of staff. One Nation put $21 million into the fund. It refuses to say where it got the money. We do know some of the donors to the Senate Leadership Fund include oil and coal corporations, which spent $12 million into it, and a single billionaire who owns international casinos put in $35 million. There were other donations, but most of the money came from a relative handful of the largest donors. Not one of them was from New Hampshire. Now let's look at the Democratic Party side. The money on the Democratic side has similar characteristics as on the Republican side. The biggest spender against Kelly Ayotte was something called the Senate Majority PAC, which spent over $15 million in New Hampshire and $92 million in the Senate races that year. The Senate Majority PAC, of course, is not from New Hampshire either. It's in Washington, D.C., affiliated with the Democratic Party, and like its Republican counterpart, almost all the money comes from very large donations of over $100,000. Several unions and wealthy individuals made contributions like that. Three billionaires in New York and Florida alone gave the Senate Majority PAC $13 million. One Chicago media mogul gave $12 million. These biggest spenders in New Hampshire's election, not one of the donors to the Senate Majority PAC, once again, was from New Hampshire. Not one of those big donors was from anywhere in New England. So if that $132 million that was spent in your election is free speech, you citizens of New Hampshire were awfully quiet that year. But money is not free speech. I suppose we don't know if any of these huge election donors have ever visited New Hampshire, but we do know they did not come here to talk to you. They didn't share their views about the senators or about anything. They didn't offer you their ideas or concerns. They didn't listen to your concerns. They didn't listen to your issues or hopes. They hid in the shadows. They wrote huge checks to flex their muscles and build their power. So what happened in a few short years between 2002, just a few election cycles, to turn a New Hampshire Senate race from an, at the time, pretty shocking $9 million affair, but had plenty of New Hampshire donors, into a $132 million mud fest with almost no New Hampshire participants. How is it in less than a decade, corporations, unions, billionaires, and others have spent $50 billion, billion with a B, to decide our state and national elections around the country in the last decade? Well, what happened is that a few Supreme Court justices rewrote the Bill of Rights. All may not have been well with our system in 2003, but Americans then were not prohibited from trying to make it better with some reasonable limits on how money was used in elections. In 2003, the Supreme Court had actually upheld the McCain-Feingold law, the Bipartisan Campaign Reform Act that Granny D helped make happen. The court said common sense limits on money in elections was perfectly consistent with free speech and the First Amendment. In fact, they went further. New Hampshire's own Justice David Souter said the demand for big money leads to pervasive public cynicism and erodes democracy. His colleague, Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, wrote that to remove limits on the corrosive effects of immense aggregations of wealth in the political process would deny to the nation a vital power of self-protection. This was the view of the court in 2003. It was the view shared by Americans for generations. Since the dawn of the Industrial Age, federal and state laws have regulated how money is used in elections to prevent corruption and to protect our rights as equal citizens. But the Supreme Court radically changed course in 2010. Justice Souter, Justice O'Connor had retired, Chief Justice Rehnquist had died, replaced by new justices. Now, these transitions are not usually considered sufficient ground to change the Constitution or the First Amendment, but that's what happened. In 2010, in a case called Citizens United versus Federal Election Commission, the court decided that that very same Bipartisan Campaign Reform Act that was upheld by the court only 5 years earlier now violated the First Amendment. The court declared that unlimited spending in elections is free speech. Corporations and unions are speakers, just like you and me, with the same right to spend unlimited money to influence election outcomes. The court has gone on since then, in other cases, to strike down scores of longstanding state and federal anti-corruption laws on this theory. Now, former Iowa Congressman Jim Leach, he's a Republican, served on Congress for many years and now serves on our American Promise Advisory Council. He says that with these decisions, the Supreme Court, in his words, have genetically modified our democratic DNA, pushing America towards corporatism and oligarchy. Corporatism and oligarchy. Words from an Iowa Republican. The genetic modification trick of the court was to strip out two core principles from the First Amendment. First, our rights as equal citizens, with free speech rights that are no more or no less than anyone else's. Second, the court stripped out concern about systemic corruption and concentrated power. Now, you may think our equal rights to speak and be represented are sufficiently important to weigh in the First Amendment balance with the power of money. But the court says no, our political equality as citizens has no bearing whatsoever on that balance. Now, this is pretty radical. The idea of political equality, that we have inalienable and reciprocal rights because we are equal human beings in society together, that goes back to the Declaration of Independence. It's the whole reason for the United States of America. Our political equality is in contrast to the system our American Revolution rejected, an aristocracy, a wealthy political class who is entitled to make the rules for everybody else. Political equality goes straight back to the American Revolution, and so does the New Hampshire Constitution. Article 1, New Hampshire citizens, and I quote, are equally free and independent. Therefore, all government originates from the people, is founded in consent, and is for the general good. The New Hampshire Constitution, again going back to our revolutionary beginnings, affirms that government is instituted for the common benefit and security of the whole community and not for the private interest of any one man, family, or class of men. Those are the words of the New Hampshire Constitution, equally free, the whole community, not the private interests of a class. We citizens of New England, with our town meeting form of government, understand very well the balance of free speech among equal citizens, the value to Republican self-government of hearing many different viewpoints in a wide range of debate. My freedom of speech does not include the right to shout you down, because you have an equal freedom of speech. Reasonable limits on money and elections make sure that all citizens may speak and hear different views, and that we may try to make good decisions based on that. So the court stripped political equality out. It doesn't count anymore. The second genetic modification that the court did to our national DNA was to strip out from the First Amendment consideration or concern about systemic corruption. Sure, we can still pass bribery laws, you know, a bag of cash directly for an act by a government official, that's still illegal. But the concern about unlimited money corrupting the entire system, the court says, is not weighed in the balance of whether laws violate the First Amendment or not. So the court announced in Citizens United that unlimited election spending by super PACs, corporations, unions, or the wealthy does not cause corruption or the appearance of corruption. Why not? Well, because the court said so. But saying so does not make it so. Again, look to the New Hampshire Constitution and the people of New Hampshire. Article 7 and 8 of the Constitution in New Hampshire declares all power resides in the people, who have the sole and exclusive right of governing themselves as a free and sovereign independent state. Government, therefore, should be open, accessible, accountable, and responsive, in the words of the New Hampshire Constitution. So if unlimited money from outside the state and the huge amounts of time your candidates and elected officials are spending talking to wealthy donors everywhere else but New Hampshire, isn't that a systemic corruption problem that you ought to be able to do something about? No, the Supreme Court says, you're not allowed to do anything about it because that money is free speech. But when we ratify the 28th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, the answer will be yes. You can do something about it, and so can all Americans. So constitutional amendments are up to us, the people, but they are not easy. They are necessary to reverse terrible Supreme Court decisions, but they are not easy. So if the Supreme Court won't change course, can we avoid the challenge of a constitutional amendment and take more modest measures, disclosure, some voter access, things like that? Well, there are many good reforms, and I support many reforms. But if we hope that all of this money, which is really just beginning, we're one decade into this, is just going to be background to a normally functioning political system, the evidence so far is not good. A recent in-depth study from Princeton confirms what many Americans intuitively know. Economic elites and corporations have a dominant impact on what happens or doesn't happen in our capitals, while most citizens, according to this study, have nearly zero impact. More than 85% of business executives surveyed by the Committee on Economic Development believe our political system is corrupt and pay to play, and wealthy donors and interests are represented while most people are not. Today, by a nearly 2-to-1 margin, Americans believe their vote does not matter because of the influence of wealthy individuals and big corporations on the political process. We now have much less competition in elections with all this money. Incumbents have more access to big national donors, the special interests, and the super PACs, and can reward them accordingly. And incumbents usually win. Fewer and fewer Americans are able or willing to offer themselves in service to run for office. In the states, 40% of legislative seats now are uncontested. 40% of our national legislative seats are not contested. Voters have no choice at all. Americans now rank corruption as the number one issue. And I think the reason why is not because of some wonky campaign finance concern. I think the reason why is that corruption goes to the heart of everything else that we care about. The looming climate catastrophe, infrastructure collapse, $22 trillion in debt, high taxes, massive deficits, rising healthcare costs, a deadly opioid crisis, whether the next generation will have a chance for good jobs and a decent place to live. These are the things people care about. And we see that corruption and undue influence of special interests prevent any common sense progress in dealing with these problems. Listen to the New Hampshire citizens who helped put New Hampshire squarely behind the 28th Amendment this month. Corinne Dodge is here today. She's a retired teacher who lost her grandson in the opioid crisis. She believes that massive political spending of pharmaceutical companies, $2.5 billion in lobbying and contributions to Congress in the last decade, led to no government action, ignored even as the deaths from opioid addiction reached epidemic proportions. Corinne says people like me cannot give enough money so that someone will listen to us. Or former New Hampshire State Senator Jim Rubens, a Republican working for the 28th Amendment here and around the country. He says today's big money, crony capitalist campaign funding system is ultimately paid for many times over by the taxpayers. Unspoken large campaign contributions are traded for much larger regulatory favors, special interest subsidies, contract awards, and the costs are paid by all of us in higher taxes, reduced prosperity, and eclipsed freedom. That's Jim Rubens, but these are the views I'm hearing all over the country. Former Wyoming Senator Al Simpson, also on our advisory council at American Promise, calls money's dominance over politics the number one problem our nation faces. It's a growing crisis, he says, that prevents us from tackling anything else. Either we uphold the values of a representative democracy, Senator Simpson says, or we allow the greed and wealth to destroy the great American experiment in self-government. With the 28th Amendment, in the words of Al Simpson, we can make the right choice. With this choice, with this constitutional amendment, for reasonable rules about money in elections, we get more, not less, speech. We get more ideas from more people, more real debate. We hear from more citizens, not fewer. And we get more real deliberation, ideas, debate than all the billions of dollars of attack ads will ever offer us. We get more candidates, a wider offering of citizens willing to serve if they aren't forced to pander to an elite donor class, won't be forced to spend 75% of their time raising money. Who would want to go into that system? We will have more cross-partisan practical solutions as representatives come out of their bunkers, no longer silenced or steered by the threat a reward of the richly funded attack machine. More information, wiser deliberation, better citizen representation. That's what the 28th Amendment to the US Constitution can do. Now, as I said, constitutional amendments are hard. They take 2/3 of Congress to propose the amendment, ratification in 3/4 of the states. That's how we've done all 27 amendments so far, 2/3 of Congress, ratification in 3/4 of the states. Now, although we've done 27 amendments that way, I understand that may cause skepticism. I get that. It's a big lift. A few years ago, I was skeptical too. In 2010, I had practiced law for 25 years when I filed a Supreme Court brief in the Citizens United case. I had thought that the Constitution and the rights of the people were protected by lawyers and judges, and I was ready to do my part. But I found out I was partly wrong. And it's only partly true that judges and lawyers have a role to play in protecting the rights of the people and the Constitution. It turns out the real story of democracy is not the story of lawyers and judges. Instead, the story of the American Republic persevering for 2 centuries is the story of constitutional amendments, the Bill of Rights, a ban on slavery, due process and equal protection of the laws, a right to vote for all citizens, regardless of race, regardless of gender, regardless of age over 18, term limits for presidents, elections of senators, so much more. Huge, permanent reforms, and none of them happened without Americans believing in and using the constitutional amendment process together. So I still deeply respect the court, but 8 times the American people have had to use the constitutional amendment process to nullify terrible Supreme Court decisions. The Supreme Court declared once that only white people have rights. The Civil War and the ratification of the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments said otherwise. The Supreme Court said women have no right to vote. The 19th Amendment disagreed. The Supreme Court saw nothing wrong with forcing you to pay a tax to cast a vote. The 24th Amendment abolished poll taxes. The Supreme Court decided 18, 19, 20-year-olds, our sons, could be conscripted into a war with no vote or representation. The 26th Amendment nullified that decision. Today, the Supreme Court says unlimited money in elections is just free speech. Our equal rights and responsibility to stop systemic corruption count for nothing. The 28th Amendment will nullify that decision. We have never had a successful reform era in America without effective constitutional amendment campaigns. So I hope you'll consider the argument for a constitutional amendment on its merits and reject the weary skepticism I sometimes hear. Oh, really? A constitutional amendment? Good luck with that. This kind of what passes for sophisticated presumption of futility does not do justice to the real peril we face in the country and the world right now. It does not do justice to future generations who are counting on us to get this right. And it doesn't do justice to the generations of Americans who came before us, put their weary skepticism aside to win 27 constitutional amendments and make our republic the longest lasting in the history of humanity. We launched American Promise in January 2016 with a strategy to ratify this 28th Amendment by July 4th, 2026, just 7 years from now. We backed out from winning and designed American Promise to accomplish each of the hard things that would need to happen. Cross-partisan work together in a divided time, bringing Americans together to do something we all believe in. Leveraging local citizen action to win votes in Congress. Leading a practical national strategy and timeline that all Americans can participate in. Today, 42 months later, we have 200,000 citizen leaders working together in all 50 states. We have more than 40 local American Promise associations around the country, a Business for American Promise campaign. 7 more states have done what New Hampshire has done in calling formally for this constitutional amendment. It's now up to 20 states total. Our thousands of members pay dues, creating a sustainable financial model. 95% of our membership contributions are under $200, with an average of $31. Our members take citizen trainings, organize together in their communities, log letters to the editor, talk with legislatures. They hold community events. They connect together on our national calls, at our national conferences, and they lead ballot initiatives and efforts in the legislature. There's Rod Morrison, a Wyoming third-generation rancher. I met him and his wife, Lynn, when they drove 7 hours to an American Promise event in Laramie, Wyoming. In Montana and Alaska, there's former state Supreme Court justices like Jim Nelson and Bud Carpinetti who came off their courts to work for this amendment because they know it's needed to protect federalism and the integrity of the states in our republic. There's Ella McGrail, who is a high school student here in New Hampshire, walked 40 miles in winter with her classmates to Concord to the New Hampshire State House to call for the 28th Amendment and an end to corruption so they will have a future. There are many in this room, I know, and across the state and nation. So many, just like you, New Hampshire citizens and Americans who know we have no right to decide it can't be done. We have no right to wait for anyone else to do it. We ourselves must take responsibility to fix this. So stop at our table in the back, or go to AmericanPromise.net or OpenDemocracyNH.org and sign up or learn more. With the New Hampshire resolution, as I said, 20 states have now taken action. More than 800 cities and towns have passed resolutions for this amendment. Thanks to Olivia and Open Democracy and so many of you, these local resolutions include 83 towns right here in New Hampshire. 83. That powerful message was finally heard in Concord this month, and it's starting to be heard even in Congress. Earlier this year, we worked with Congressman Ted Deutsch, a Florida Democrat, and John Katko, an upstate New York Republican. Even in these times, they stood up together to introduce this proposed constitutional amendment. And New Mexico Senator Tom Udall is going to introduce it in the Senate after the 4th of July. Now, this version is not written in stone, and as it's the first constitutional amendment in the digital age, we see no reason why we can't get the best wisdom and ideas and wordsmithing from all Americans who want to weigh in to make it work as well as possible for the whole country. Here's what it says, though, so far. To advance democratic self-government and political equality, to protect the integrity of government and the electoral process, Congress and the states may regulate and set reasonable limits on the raising and spending of money to influence elections. Section 2, Congress and the states may distinguish between natural persons and corporations or other artificial entities created by law, including by prohibiting such entities from spending money to influence elections. We have time to get this language perfected, as I said, with our roadmap of winning in just the next several years. We can't wait while global money pours into our political system and buy it out. So with millions of cross-partisan supporters in all 50 states, we're going into the 2020 election with a candidate pledge campaign and state initiatives with a realistic goal of 240 committed supporters in the House by the end of this Congress and 50 senators on board by the end of this Congress. Now, we know we need 67 senators and 290 by about 2023 or four when our timeline has this amendment coming out of Congress, so that we're getting there, and with your help, we'll go over the finish line. The New Hampshire resolution's a big step forward, but New Hampshire citizens are not resting. They're signing on to the delivery of this resolution to the governor's desk and ask the governor to join with the people of New Hampshire and the legislature and telling them to get to work with other members, regardless of party, to put politics aside and work together to get this amendment moving. New Hampshire citizens are delivering your 28th Amendment resolution to state and local representatives, again, asking them to work together, regardless of party, to prepare New Hampshire to ratify the amendment when it comes out of Congress and back to New Hampshire and the states for ratification. New Hampshire citizens are out there asking every candidate for any office to commit to supporting the 28th Amendment and putting partisan politics aside to get it done. And as you know, you have a unique opportunity to let the rest of the country know that your rights and political system are not for sale because the presidential candidates spend a lot of time here. Ask them to support the 28th Amendment. I hope you will join in this effort, and don't be intimidated by either weary skepticism or the difficult road ahead. Amendments don't happen in easy times. Powerful forces do not just surrender. They will fight back. But in this case, our fight is better than our surrender. The big money forces will say very loudly to try to drown you out that money is free speech, that you're trying to amend the First Amendment, that you want to silence others. That's nonsense. Voices are silenced when elections and the microphone in the public square are sold to the highest bidder. When we protect the equal rights of all Americans to speak and be heard and stop corruption, we strengthen the First Amendment and the voices of every American. Ella McGrail says, quite rightly, about free speech. We know freedom of speech in New Hampshire. Freedom of speech is the stories, experiences, wisdom, pleas, and views of our people. It is not dollars and checks and exchange behind closed doors. The big money forces will try to divide us. They'll say, this is a liberal idea. In liberal areas, we'll say, this is a conservative plot to shrink government. Well, if they were honest, they'd say both, because it is a liberal thing, it's a conservative thing, it's a moderate thing, it's an American thing. This is how American Promise brings together Republicans like former Senator Olympia Snowe in Maine and former Senator Al Simpson, who I mentioned, with Democrats like former Governor Mike Dukakis and current Bernie Sanders co-chair and Our Revolution president Nina Turner. This is how we build cross-partisan board, staff, grassroots membership. Those folks don't agree with each other on lots of things, but they're working together to get this done. It's not partisan. The most recent poll shows American support for this at 81%. And when Americans get to speak about it, we see the same kind of numbers. In November, Massachusetts voters by a 3-1 margin approved the 28th Amendment and approved a nonpartisan citizen commission to move it ahead. This ballot initiative was endorsed by our Republican Governor Charlie Baker and our very progressive Senator Elizabeth Warren. Both endorsed this, and as I said, it passed wholeheartedly, and so did ballot initiatives all over the country at the local level, and Montana and Colorado have passed ballot initiatives for this with 75% support. Again, not a partisan thing. In Wyoming, which voted 68% for President Trump, our American Promise members collected thousands of citizen signatures from around the state, delivered them to the Wyoming House, dominated by Republicans, which promptly passed a resolution calling for this 28th Amendment. This is not partisan, but in these divided times, we know that doesn't make it easy. We'll have setbacks, sometimes sad to say, you know, just the fact that one party supports something will make the other party say, oh, I must be against it, right? So that means it's up to us. This isn't going to be done by our politicians. It's going to be done by us. And New Hampshire citizens have shown us the way. Steady perseverance. This month, when New Hampshire became the 20th state to get behind this amendment, it was the sixth time the question had been before the legislature in Concord. Year after year, it had come close, but not across the finish line. It happened because thousands and thousands of New Hampshire citizens never gave up. They continued to make phone calls, wrote letters to the editor, walked across the state, talked with their neighbors, introduced town meeting warrants, and so much more. They never gave up and were rewarded with victory this month. Now, all of you in New Hampshire have demonstrated again that even as we Americans may have grave concerns about our political system, we still believe in the promise of our American Revolution, equal citizens, human liberty, our own responsibility for effective self-government. And you've shown us why, if we believe that, now we must act. Back in 1838, the height of the early American Lyceum movement, a 29-year-old Abraham Lincoln stepped up to speak at the Young Men's Lyceum in Springfield, Illinois. He spoke about what was to become the cause of his life, the preservation of that great American contribution to the human story, government of, for, and by the people. And he insisted that the success or failure of that was entirely up to us. Lincoln said, "If destruction be our lot, we must ourselves be its author and finisher. As a nation of free men, we must live through all time or die by suicide." I don't think we die by suicide in America. We may be, as the late Senator John McCain was fond of saying, a nation of 325 million opinionated, vociferous people who argue and compete and sometimes vilify each other. But as Granny Dee found out on her 3,000-mile journey, and as I've been blessed to find out as traveling the nation for American promise, I see we also are a nation of the most kind, generous, brave people who, regardless of party or politics, step up over and over again to help each other, to serve in our communities and nation, and to pray and work for the future of America and the world. So it's a privilege to be in this cause with you, a cause that's so much bigger than any of us. I'm grateful and inspired to see the rapid growth of this new American Promise movement and for the opportunity to share it with you today. Thank you so much.